So we already decided that the woman's considered, in labor, is considered chol sheish masakana for 3 days. We just mentioned earlier that it's either 72 hours or three halachic days. Meaning, so in this case, it would have been, if it was 5 minutes before skia, that would have been the first day. So it would have been Thursday 5 minutes and then Friday Shabbos, as opposed to 72 hours, but we seem to pass in 72 hours. The other time this comes up is by Yom Kippur. A woman who just gave birth is exempt from fasting on Yom Kippur. Now it's going to make a very big difference, right? Let's say Yom Kippur comes out, it can't come out Sunday, but let's say it was 7:30 to Monday, right? Yom Kippur can't come out on Sunday. But there's a big nafkamina whether Sunday was included in the 72 hours or not. And so it's machlokas haposkim, how we deal with that. Fine. So other issues that come up are, let's say we're going to the hospital on Shabbos, so we're allowed to go, right? She's a chol sheish masakana. We're allowed to buy that this is the raisa for her, right? We should do so b'shinui, and we should only allowed to do so when she becomes a yoledes, right? When she has the 3 simanim of leda. Either she is bleeding profusely, or she cannot walk on her own, or she's sitting on the birthing stool, which I'm at least going to interpret as pushing. Because I don't know why you would sit on the birthing stool. I don't know why any pregnant woman would sit on the stool. It seems like an uncomfortable place to be sitting. But whatever, I'm assuming that refers to some type of pushing. Fine. Which is sort of towards the end of labor. You do not want to be traveling to the hospital while the woman is pushing. Very bad. Because she could have a baby in the care. So, all the posts can already write, which you have to do before, in order to create a safe situation later, you may do already before. You can mechal Shabbos bid d'oraisa already earlier. So Mr. Brewer is talking about calling the midwife. You have to violate a Shabbos d'oraisa, whatever it is, to call the midwife. You don't have to wait until the woman becomes a yoledes with the 3 simanim to violate Shabbos bid d'oraisa to call the midwife, because it has to be done earlier. That which has to be done earlier can be done earlier. It should still be done with the shinui. Interestingly, there's a tshuva of Rav Ben-Tzion of Ashol, who was one of the Rosh Yeshiva of Kfar Yosef recently. I mean, he passed away not so long ago. So he says, comes up with a very interesting idea. We said about, talking about the labor woman, we said the briskarav, right? The briskarav, the griz, he says, there's two issues, there's two dinim by a labor woman. She's both a yoledes, which is a labor woman, and she's also a cholos yesh masakana. So he wanted to argue that a woman is a yoledes from whatever time she's a yoledes, right? And it takes a while to give birth as a process, takes a little bit. And once those 3 simanim hit, she also becomes a chol sheyesh bo sakana. And that lasts for the next 3 days, 72 hours afterwards. So what the difference is, he says, by a yoledes, you have to do a shinui. But once she's a chol sheyesh bo sakana, so it's machlokes mechaber ramah, what do you have to do a shinui? The mechaber, so chol sheyesh bo sakana does not require a shinui. And for the ramah, it does. For the rambam, right, it does not, and for the Rash, but it does. Okay, so if you pass like the Shulchan Aruch, like the Mechaber, there's a big difference. Once those simanim hit, you do not need a shinui. Meaning, so practically, what that means? It means all the preparations for the birth and doing all those things you should do b'shinui, right? Because that's already she's not a chol sheyesh basakana yet. But when she's getting really, really close to the rest, it becomes a chol sheyesh basakana, and then according to the Mechaber, you don't need to do any shinui anymore. Rav Ben-Tzion Avashol takes the opposite approach. He wants to minimize the shinuyim only to the actual parts of the labor itself. Because everything before is a chol sheyesh masakana. It's a little bit counterintuitive. He says before she was a chol sheyesh masakana. As she's preparing, getting herself, she's having contractions, and she's coming to the hospital, she's a chol sheyesh masakana. The only time you need a shinui is at the actual birth. It's a little bit strange, right? You would think that the level of danger increases, not decreases. It is all about level of danger, right? We said, why does a yoledes need a shinui? Gemara said a yoledes needs a shinui. So we said, why does she need a shinui? We said, because either it's normal, and right, this is different from a regular chola, and right then the Eerie Magad Mishnah said, it's not that dangerous. It's not that dangerous. Okay, but where's the danger? You would think at least the danger was as you get closer and closer to the birth. I don't know, so it's a little bit counterintuitive. The brisker rosh mahalach seems to make a lot more sense. Fine. So what about accompanying the woman to the hospital on Shabbos? So they talk about this, right? So she can travel to the hospital on Shabbos. And we said, ideally, halacha l'maisa, you should either call an ambulance or a cab, right? You should never really need to drive. Because, A, you will get there slower than the ambulance. And the ambulance will actually get, if you get there at the same time as the ambulance will actually get you care. First of all, in the ambulance. And second of all, once you get into the hospital, showing up with an ambulance is always faster than showing up in your car. And B, you have all these problems with your car. Well, you turned on your car, you got there, you drove. You can't drive with a semen practically, so you don't have to. In theory, you would need to, but practically we don't. You got to the hospital, now you can't turn off the car. What do you do with the car? You have to park. It's very complicated. It's a hardening sign to stand by that I'm not going to turn off my car and leave it. It's going to get stolen. Just take a cab, and it's a lot simpler. So either ambulance if it's really tense, or a cab. Fine. But so can you go with her to the hospital? Right? Can the husband go with her? There's a Chil Shabbos. So what's a Chil Shabbos? So that's a Amir L'Nofri, right? We're going to get a non-Jewish cab to drive to the hospital. It's a Amir L'Nofri. So what's the difference if you go with her?
Because it's putting her at ease.
No, meaning a lot of reasons why you should go with her, and in 2012 in this country, I think it would be, what do you mean you're not going with her, right? I think most husbands do go with the wife to the hospital if they're available to go. Apparently in the past this was not the case. But meaning what would be the potential issue here?
Of going with her?
Yeah.
Okay,
that's the easiest one. If she's going out of the tchum, I'm also going out of the tchum. We both are violating an issur, right? Mm-hmm. If it's in, let's say we're in Columbia, which is, we're on 185th Street, it's 168th Street, we're well within the tchum, right? So, and she's taking a cab anyway. It's a mirror of the nothing.
You also can't go out of the, you can't go in
a
car.
Why not?
You might drive it.
He's driving. It's his car. The cab driver is not letting me even in the passenger seat, let alone the driver's seat. They ever let you in there? Come on, you go. It's not Shabbos. So she's allowed to. So if it's only a mural enough for
you. So you're letting go of the car, Jaws?
We don't do it, right? For no reason. But she's allowed to drive to the house. If I need to, I can drive to the house.
So if I want to go in a car, should I take that?
What issue would you be violating? So there's several issues you could be violating. So you're not driving, right? So when you open the door, the light goes on.
Okay. He opens the door.
He opens the door, he closes the door. So what issue did you violate? So it's issue Rabbanon to travel on Shabbos. Okay, so there's usually an issue Rabbanon to ride a horse. So Shabbos thinks it applies to even our cars. Issue Rabbanon. Okay, so you have issue Rabbanon. She's having a baby. We can violate the Surah Darabah. We can certainly violate the Surah Darabah. We can certainly violate the Surah Darabah. It's going to be mutter. Can I violate the Surah
Darabah? Wait, is the Tchum a Surah
Darabah? Tchum can be Darabah.
Depending
on the Tchum.
Does that mean you can't travel?
Depending on the Tchum. Well, I don't think of the Tchum.
What is the Tchum?
So the Tchum is either Yud Beis Mil outside of the city, which is like the equivalent of like a couple of miles outside of the inhabited part of the city. Right? And maybe water changes it, and whatever distance is. Maybe 2,000 amas outside the city is machlokas. So maybe here to Jersey is tchum now, potentially. But within Manhattan, you're certainly good, and we have many hospitals in Manhattan, so it's not a problem. There's no tchum problem. And if she needs to buy the tchum, she's left by the tchum. So can you go with her? So the halacha pretty much is that most poskim assume, I think, especially in our world, is that the woman needs someone to go with her. Whether it's her husband or her mother, someone should go with her. I think this makes a lot of medical sense. I think she will get cared for better if there's somebody there for two reasons. First of all, she may not be able to move. And if she needs something, her only way of obtaining help is going to be to scream. Right? Which is not only unsightly, might not happen because she might be embarrassed, and help is not always accessible. Like, if she needs something that's not scream worthy, she's not going to get it, so she's not going to get it.
She could die along the way.
She could die along the way. There's a driver in the car. Right?
Yeah, he's not the driver now.
Okay, right, fine. You're going to take better care of her than the driver is. Right? Someone who's... Even if it's a friend, someone can go with her. It doesn't have to be you. It could be anyone. But someone should go with her, first of all, for on the way. So there's a driver on the way. So we're assuming, no, the driver is a good guy and he's going to take care of her. Even so, you have to have someone go with you. First of all, it puts your mind at ease a little bit to know someone's there. I think this is just human nature, that people who are in danger or in sick, even this is a makom sakana, but it's not the biggest sakana in that. But nonetheless, people are put at ease when they're there with someone else. They're not there by themselves in a completely foreign situation. And B, I think just medically, the woman will get better treatment, both because, first of all, she's in the labor room, let's say. Let's say everything went well, Martha's just sitting there, and she needs something. That nurse just left. She's not going to get it. She's not going to, right, that's at least fulfill Shahar Tzrach. Or she just wants a cup of water. Right? She can't get out of bed. Filling a cup of water is no issue at all. She just a drink of water. She
is
will
there,
get.
Is there some kind of concept of an attendant to a cholah?
Yeah. So not so much in the Gemara, but nowadays, so first of all, if a cholah has an advocate today in a modern hospital, he will get treated better. Right? The cholah is just sitting in the room with no one going to get anything for him or her, they will not get as good treatment. People will not be as responsive. Nurses are wonderful people, don't get me wrong. They just have many, 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 many patients. They can't be checking on this person every 30 seconds. If you're there, you will check on this person every 30 seconds. You're sitting in the room. Whatever they need, you can either go get yourself or get a nurse, go outside, say, this is really serious. I know you just left, but I need you right now. So I think, first of all, the person will get better treated because of the way modern medicine works. The nurses cannot sit in the room with the patients. I'm not saying they're doing their job. They're trying to take care of so many people at once. They just can't. Secondly, may or may not be true, many people believe, at least anecdotally, that patients who have people who care for them, the medical teams seem to care for them more also. Just psychologically, someone here cares about this person, we care about this person a little more, as opposed to, no one even cares what's happening to this person. Sometimes it would be the opposite, right? No one's here for them, I'll take better care of them. Often it works like you see that many people are involved, so you feel more psychologically in tune to do it. But Dr. Abraham told me, Nishma Savram, he thought that if there was someone in the hospital by themselves on Shabbos, you should make every effort to be there for them, with them, as an effort. Maybe even violating the Daraisa, because it's that serious. Because also, the last thing is, if you know this person well, right, you'll also know when something's off more than the nurse will. Right? You know when that's not how they really act normally. Something else is going on. They think she's okay. She's not exactly okay right now. That's not how she normally acts. And that's really important. I mean, this happens all the time. They can't pick up on these subtle cues, right? Someone who has a little bit of a mental confusion, well, if I don't know this person well, I don't know if they're confused or they're just slow, right? If this person is normally brilliant, talking 100 words a minute, and now they're talking really slow, a nurse might not even realize that that's different. But you will, and you can take care of that person a lot better. So we're certainly going to allow you to do this, especially if she wants it. Certainly we can do it. But most of the poskim assume that it's mutter. The Chazon Ish is quoted as saying, we should encourage people to go with her to the hospital, because it's going to put her at ease. It also might avoid a potential yichud problem in the camp. But leaving that aside for a moment, we should encourage people because it will give her a better medical care. Fine. So, fine. Fine. So one more issue about labor, and then we'll go back, I think, to Chavala. So how many weeks is a woman pregnant for?
How many what?
How long is a woman pregnant for?
9 months,
very good. 9 months is a silly month thing. I never understood this. She gives birth at the end of the ninth month. I can never catch this, which is, I always thought about this. 10 months? I don't know, it's 40 weeks. It's 40 weeks. So 40 weeks, each month is not really 4 weeks, but okay, it's 40 weeks. The Gemara actually has a clever gematria. The pasuk says, Vayitein Hashem la hei rayon. Right? Which in Hebrew is pregnancy. So this is 5 and 200 and 10 and 6 and 50, which is 271, right?
The number of days.
Mm-hmm. Which is how many weeks?
7. It's almost 4.
It's a little bit earlier, no? 7, 8. Close enough. 56, and so that's 5. Okay. It's like 38 point something weeks. Pretty close, right? And you have to know it's 38 weeks, right? It's 38 and change. So you can say it's pretty close, and that's it, right? But it's better than that. So that would be sufficient, but it's actually better than that. But when are we counting from? 40 weeks, right? So 40 weeks is counts from where? It's called the LMP, the last menstrual period. Right, a woman gets her period, and her endometrial lining sheds, and she's needed, also. Right, and she goes, right, okay, and then she ovulates again, and she can get pregnant. They found that the best way to predict when a woman will give birth is going by the beginning of the last menstrual period. Okay, when she started We know she can't get pregnant now. But that's an easy way to do it. Chazal are not assuming like that. They're assuming we're counting from at least when she went to the mikvah. Because we know she can't be pregnant from then. So on average, a woman's going to the mikvah on day 12 or day 14 of her cycle, which is 12 or 14 days later, so it's actually 48, it's either 39.8 or 40 days. So it's actually pretty accurate. Right? So whenever in Chazal we say like 40 days, right? We didn't talk about this, but like in other contexts in halacha, 40 days of pregnancy comes up. When are we counting from? We're counting from when she went to the mikvah. Right, so it's really going to be 54, 55, 56 days, right? No, 12 to 14. 52 to 54 days, according to the medical calculation.
Does she not have a period when she gets pregnant?
Yeah, yeah, no, but before. Let's say, so the woman is not pregnant, so she had a period. She sees down today, and she sees blood usually for 4 or 5 days. Then she has to do whatever she has to get clean, and count 7 clean days, and then go to the mikvah. So it's, on average, going to be between 12 and 14 days before she can go to the mikvah. Now we know that the couple wasn't halachic. The couple was not together in those 14 days. 12 to 14 days. She can't be pregnant. Right? She can only start to become pregnant, right, from the night of the mikvah. So with Chazal, they're counting from, we don't know when she got pregnant, but certainly not before she went to the mikvah, which on average is going to be 12 to 14 days earlier. So when they say 38 weeks, they're counting from the mikvah. When the doctor tells you 40 weeks, they're counting from the last menstrual period. For whatever reason they're doing, we just have to make sure we have the chesed right. So 38, according to Chazal, is going to be 40, according to the doctors. So, fine. That's an easy way to remember. Okay.
Did they say that when they calculate this, they say the weeks or the days?
They said 271 days. And they said, oh, there's a 3-day fudge factor. It could be 271, 272, 273. And they have to also realize they didn't know when the woman got pregnant. Right? It could be. They knew it was after the mikvah, they didn't know what day. So you can see where there's a lot of leeway here, right? Because like, women give birth, not everyone gives birth on the same day. How many women actually give birth at the end of 40 weeks? I think it's like a plurality, meaning at 40 weeks, I think it's like 20-something percent. But that's the highest, it's a plurality of all places. I think it just gets lower as you get older, but it's not a majority. So they knew that, but they also didn't know when women got pregnant. When did the egg fertilize, they had no idea. So that's approximate. Okay. So there's something called, so fine, we're pregnant for 9 months, and then what happens? She goes into labor, right? So we don't really know what causes labor to start. We don't really know. A lot of theories out there, we don't believe we know exactly what causes labor to start. So we don't know, right? Some women go or have babies earlier, right? Before 37 weeks is called premature, and we try to avoid that because those babies end up often having to go into the neonatal ICU, and they end up having problems. Many of them have problems. Many of the problems we can deal with. As technology advances, we can deal with many more of them. But still, we try to avoid it at all costs, because after 37 weeks, we know that the chance of survival, the chance of not having any problems, is much higher. So we try to avoid it. So we don't really know why when it goes into labor, so it's hard to push it off, right? So when it goes into labor, though, and she starts to have contractions, right? And then the baby's in the sack, the water breaks, okay, that's good. So sometimes women want to, for whatever reason, even though we don't know what causes labor naturally, we can cause labor. We can induce labor, right? We can give the woman a drug called oxytocin, and we can induce labor, okay? So this could be done for a variety of reasons. It could be done, for example, because let's say the woman needs to have some surgery. She really hurt her hand, for whatever reason, she needs to do something medically necessary, and she needs to not be pregnant at the time. So we'll induce labor so we could do it. Or let's say, so we talked about right when the woman, so normally the womb, the cervix is closed. That's why the baby doesn't fall out. And towards the end, it starts expanding, while dilating, and the baby comes out. Let's say the woman's already dilated but not in labor. We're concerned that if she leaves the hospital, she may end, right? So labor often, why it takes so long, is you have to get everything ready, the cervix has to open, and sometimes it can take a long time. If she's starting, you know, halfway there, it can take very fast. And so we're concerned that perhaps she'll have a baby in an unsafe situation. So that was actually my situation. And so the doctor recommended that we induce. Fine. So that's why, to avoid a medical problem. Right? Now you can imagine that this also happens for less good reasons. Right? You can also say, well, it's December 31st today, and, right? The sort of one is in December. And I will get a tax break as if I had a child the whole year if I have a baby on December 31st, right? I get an extra deduction on my taxes. I had a baby in 2012, right? Meaning, so I can put him as an exemption on my taxes, but it doesn't matter when they're born. I can count them as an exemption starting from the beginning of the year. So at the end of the year, you're going to see people who want to reduce during the end of the year because they want to have a baby. This year, last year, right? You can say some people might want to be December, some people want to be January 1st. With the Asian New Year, this happens also. People want to be born in the year of the whatever and not the year of the whatever, and so this happens. Or people just scheduling their vacation, meaning a woman often gets maternity leave when she has a baby, right? So often it's just easy to plan that, right? That's already hard to plan. I mean, that you have to plan a lot more. But like a day or two here, a week or two here, you could sort of plan. Or you want to have it over the weekend, it's more convenient. Or the week before Thanksgiving, let's say. So no one wants to have a baby before Thanksgiving. Why? Because they're off anyway. They have a baby that Monday, and then they get an extra 2 days off.
Right.
Okay, so you have all these chesbainis, and so some of them are not the most savory reasons. But you can do it. Or the doctor's like, I'm going on vacation. I'm going on vacation tomorrow, so let's do this thing. So is that a good reason? Like, okay, but there are other doctors. This is New York City. But, oh, you want your doctor. Okay, everyone has a reason. Some reasons are good, some reasons are not good. So, yeah. Or, not good, but they don't seem as... Could be. Okay, that's a worse reason. I thought at least the taxes was at least, you know, a little noble.
We know how to induce them, but we don't know what...
We don't know why a woman naturally... We know what happens when she does. We don't know what triggers that. But we can trigger ourselves. We know in labor...
Does her body release that? That?
Yeah, in labor her body releases natural oxytocin. We don't know why it starts to do that. Well, if I give her an IV, so then I know why it starts to do that. Right? I give her an IV. So it starts to do that. And then we can break her water also. We can do that artificially. Break the water also leads to labor, to contractions and labor. But normally,
what happens when the water breaks? Like, what is happening?
Why does that? I don't know why that causes more labor. Like, why does that make labor happen faster?
No, but I mean, why? What causes?
Normal contractions. Meaning the baby's in the sac of water, and the uterus is contracting, and at some point it's going to pop the sac.
Yeah. So the body knows that it.
No, but it happens towards. Meaning that happens once the body's in the woman's in labor. That's not like the first thing that sets it off. It's when we do it artificially that can induce labor. That can induce it, right? But we know how to do it, and then we know what the body's going to do in reaction. We don't know, let's say a woman's not doing any of these things. Why does the body initiate that? We don't know. If we did, then we'd in theory try to avoid it in the premature babies, right? The woman in the 36th week, we see something that's looking along the lines of that something's going to happen, we can. Maybe we won't be able to, but at least we'll know what we're looking for to fight it. Now we don't think we even know what's the trigger, and so we can't treat it in any way. We have all these aces, but nothing really to treat the real thing. Fine. So what's the problem with inducing labor? Okay, so it's convenient, no? I mean, wouldn't that be better? Let's say it's Friday afternoon. Right? Let's say it's Friday afternoon, and it's almost Shabbos. So say, whoa, I don't have a baby on Shabbos. Chil Shabbos. In Mutter, it's Chil Shabbos. I have Bris on Shabbos, and it's a boy. In Mutter, but like, it's a Chil Shabbos. It's Mutter Chil Shabbos, it's Chil Shabbos. It's a baby Friday. Isn't that better? To avoid Shabbos? That's a noble reason, right? That's noble. You want to avoid Chil Shabbos. We're allowed to do it, the Rambam says. It's Dechuya. It's Dechuya. When we don't have a choice, we have a Chal Shabbos. You don't want a Chal Shabbos. It's Dechuya. So is that, that's more noble, no?
Yeah, but I mean, you shouldn't, I don't know, it just seems a little bit,
Right, or if Motzei Shabbos, we say, oh, if we slow down the labor somehow, wait till after Shabbos, we'll be the Chil Shabbos.
It's still not the body's natural...
Right, okay, so what? So what?
So, I don't know.
Okay, so let's, so... Okay, we frown upon it generally.
Right.
Okay? So...
It's like taking a baby's gender. Jews don't do that.
No, so you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised. Many people know the gender. They don't want to talk about it, but know the gender. So they quote, so this is like a modern shaila, right? Like, I mean, when can you induce labor? Ah! So the Mekubalim can induce labor, right? The Kabbalists used to be able to write a Kameya. Kameya is like an amulet, right? So could you write an amulet for a woman to induce labor? Was that an appropriate thing to do from a Kabbalistic perspective? Right? Let's assume it's going to work. I don't know how these things work. But, right? That's inducing labor back in the day. So, the Arizal, Right? He says you're not supposed to do that. Why? He says, because a child is born at a certain time, and whatever time is, it has a mazel in the sky, and it's supposed to be born at a certain time, and that's going to be his or her natural time, and that has a certain bracha and whatever associated with it, and you're changing that. That's not good. It's not good to do that. Okay? He said it's just not a good thing to do. And because you're changing all the mazel, all these things that are, whether he'll be rich or poor, it depends on what time he's born. And I'll be Kabbalah, that's not a good idea. Okay. I'm not very convinced. Okay, so I don't know. That doesn't really speak to me. I don't know if that speaks to you. I'll be Kabbalah, it's not a good thing because of the mazel and the zodiac, and I don't know. Rav Moshe Feinstein had a different approach.
This reminds me of something you learned last semester.
Yeah.
Donating organs.
Yeah. Well, they're opposed because, right. But so Rav Moshe Feinstein says like this. He says he's very opposed. Very opposed. He says, first of all, if there's any medical... He says, if there's a medical reason, do it. This is only when there's no medical reason. Right? A lot of people are doing this out of convenience. Or Shabbos. I mean, Shabbos is, seems like a better reason than convenience than the tax break, right? But, okay, people are doing convenience, tax break, Shabbos, whatever it is. He says, first of all, if there's any danger here, so forget it. Just do it. Dangerous situation. He says, otherwise, first of all, it's better usually that the baby's in the stomach. That the baby is not, okay, fine, that depends. That's not so helpful.
Baby is what?
It's usually better for the child to be in the womb as long as possible. Better for the child's health. Okay. But we can tell that. Right, we can do a sound. He says, yeah, and the other hand, he says, wait a minute. Laboring woman is a cholos yesh basakana, right? It's the leda. The birth itself is considered a sakana. And it's inappropriate to bring that sakana upon yourself early. Because you're entering a sakana, you're putting yourself in the makom sakana when you don't have to be. Right now, I don't have to be in a sakana. Yes, at some point you will, right? Because you're going to have a baby. But you're not allowed to opt in. You can't put yourself into a sakana. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put you into a sakana. But you can't put yourself into that sakana. Right? Because you're, it's a, okay. So he says, no, there's a better reason though. He says, no, real labor is not considered a sakana. Labor, having a baby at the right time, when the HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, is not a sakana. Why? He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world that we should have children. So it can't be, he even though it seems to us that it's dangerous, right? And presently, and there's a mitzvah to have children. How could it give you a mitzvah to do something that's crazy, right? It must be, he says, doesn't make sense that you'd have to enter a makom sakana, a dangerous situation, to fulfill a mitzvah. Rather, especially women who are not chayav in the mitzvah of pure viruv, it's men who are chayav to have children, the women are not chayav to have children. So he says, oh, Hashem must have given some bracha, there's a promise from Hashem that the woman will be okay. Right? Even though ostensibly it's a medical emergency, right? We're considering it to be an actual real life makom sakana. It seems to us to be a makom sakana. There must be some haftacha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he'll take care of everything. Yeah, he goes, but he's well aware that not all will make it, right? I mean, sometimes there is a makom sakana. Right? Not everyone gets a bracha. Not everyone's a different person. He goes, no, and if something bad happens to them, it's not because, it's because they deserve the punishment. And this was the opportune moment to punish them. Okay? Right? It says, normally a woman...
Sounds pretty, already.
It's an interesting, it's very non-halachic. Right? It's a very philosophical notion. He says, oh, so women who, this was Rosh Hashanah, this is Karit. But he says women who do have some problem during labor, so they didn't have that tafa, they didn't have that bracha. Why not? They must have deserved it somehow.
It's like saying, like, oh, we get sick, what Hashem wants to kill you, you die.
No, you can treat it. He needs to say, though, that most women have no sakana. Right? It's just strange to say, look, how can you ever require a woman, how can you ever allow a woman to become pregnant? Why is that mutter? It's a makom sakana. She's not chayav. Only men are chayav in the midst of peripheral. Women are not chayav in the midst of peripheral. Only we're required to have children. She is not required to have children. Even they're not chayiv.
Yeah, but we could kill them.
But we could kill them. So you're saying, oh, so his mother, but then the kid won't be Jewish. Have a kid with a sixa, and then the guy with a child. It's unlikely to say that, right? That Hashem intended us to have children with non-Jews and then convert them. That seems unlikely. No?
Well, it wasn't a problem until Ezra and Hashem, yeah.
No, what?
That we couldn't have wives that were non-Jewish.
It was practical. No, it was usher. It just wasn't practical problem. No? I think so. The Torah says you can't marry a non-Jew.
So you can't marry a...
No, you're not allowed to marry anyone who's not Jewish. Then you have to convert them first. But it wasn't practically a problem. But regardless, you can't envision this as being what the Torah wanted, right? The Torah probably wanted a Jew to marry a Jewish lady, a Jewish man to marry a Jewish lady, have a Jewish family, and continue to be the Jewish people, right? I mean, it's more likely. You'll admit that, right?
Well, that's only if you say...
More likely than not.
Only if you say that it does that the baby's not Jewish.
Well, yeah, the halacha is the baby's not Jewish. The halacha is that
was that always the halacha?
Yeah. That was always the halacha. A Jewish man and non-Jewish woman, maybe it's not Jewish. You can convert
them. Well, it was always the halacha when halacha was written down.
Seems like you can convert them. But, okay, whatever. We're not getting...
He had 1,000 wives, none of them were Jewish.
No, he converted them.
Maybe.
He can... No. Why don't you convert them? Okay. Or you can convert the babies. You can't tell me that that's what the Torah wants, really. That's the ideal. Even if it would be Muslim. You really think that's what the Torah wants? The continuation of the Jewish people should exist in this weird and strange way. And then what about all the Jewish women?
I'm only saying it's because we're bringing pregnancy, impregnating into question. So I'm going to bring halacha.
No, but it's a mitzvah even. Forget it. It's a mitzvah to do this. So how can it be a mitzvah to makom sakana? We don't find any other mitzvah to stick yourself into dangerous situations. How can this rabbi ask you to do something dangerous? Require you to do something dangerous? Especially if you're not chayiv, you're a woman, you're not chayiv. Right? How could he expect a woman to do this? It just doesn't seem fair.
What about going to war for a mitzvah? That's dangerous.
So going to war for a mitzvah is because there's a dangerous situation. Right? I mean, going to war for a mitzvah means you're defending the Jewish people. So we're allowing you to go to war so that they don't attack me. No, the situation is already dangerous. You're just going to make sure that fewer people die. I mean, we're sending you to war, so fewer people.
Yeah, but you could say that we're in danger now because we're all mortal and we're all dying. We need more children to live on.
Okay, but
we're fighting the war of
entropy. But you're not going to beat entropy. So he's saying, look, it must be that there's some haftacha. Practically, it's dangerous, right? Because it must be that Hashem Baruch Hu gave a haftacha that it should work out. Right?
Didn't Hashem put a curse on women?
That it should be painful. Not that you're dangerous. Pain's not that. Pain is pain. The eitz of healthy bottom.
What's the lashon of the puzzle?
The eitz of healthy bottom. Harba arba eitz of neif behero neif. Your pregnancy shall be. I will make it great, meaning longer than it was. The eitz of healthy bottom, and you will give birth in either sadness or pain. Eitz. It's hard to say. But that's a curse. We try to avoid that whenever we can. And so in Rosh Hashanah, when someone's telling
you... Are you justifying why Ramosha
had... I'm giving you the background for what he's saying. I think this is what was going on in his mind. It can't be that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is asking a woman to put herself in a dangerous situation. It's just not possible. So he says, it must be Haftacha. And then he goes on to say, yeah, that's only... The Haftacha only works when at the time when Hashem wants her to have a baby. I don't know how he knows that. But he's saying it's a dangerous situation. Hakadosh Baruch Hu promises it'll be okay, but he only promises it'll be okay at the natural time. So if you bring about that he should have a baby earlier, you don't have that haftacha anymore. So now it's really dangerous. Now it's really a bad idea. Shouldn't do it. Okay? That's what he says. Does that make sense? I mean, forget, does it make sense? Did you follow his logic? Leave alone, does it make sense? So Rosh Feinstein says that. So, depending on how much you buy into this svara, it's going to be now, Rav Moshe is going to say, oh, for medical reasons, it's okay. So what's a medical reason? Right? So the more you accept his approach, the more limited you will be in the medical reasons that will allow induction, right? If you don't accept this approach, and many of the post-communist issue, for example, don't really accept this approach, are more liberal when it comes to when what's considered reasonable. I don't think anyone here would say convenience or vacation or a tax deduction is reasonable. But we're going to be a lot more, you're not going to need a makom sakana. They're not going to tell you, oh, you're going to die unless we induce you. Okay, if you're going to die in case we induce you, that's what it sounds like in Ravosha, then you can do it. What about you not going to die? It's just, I don't know, I'm uncomfortable with the situation like it is now. So what do you do then?
Ravosha says that if you are going to die...
He says, first of all, if you're going to die, if it's mamisha sakana, suffix sakana even, then you can do it. Because there's already suffix sakana now. He's saying, meaning his
no,
whole question...
But
let's say there's some exosia by me.
No, but if there's a suffix sakana, then you're supposed to die because it's magical pregnancy.
No, he says you have to do everything you can. If something happens to you, that's why it happened. Okay, that's one approach of why people suffer in this world. Okay. He's saying that if there's a haftacha, why do women die in pregnancy? In labor? In childbirth? That's what it is. Women die in childbirth, right? It doesn't happen so much, right? If there's a haftacha, why does it happen? It must mean it was another reason that it happened. Normally, the way it should be is there's a chacha that is supposed to take care of you. If the woman dies in childbirth, it must be for some other reason. The chacha was there, but there was another reason. Okay. But if there's a makom sakana right now, right? If we don't induce her, she's b'sakana. So then you're trading one sakana for another sakana. So he says, so you do whatever the doctor says. So point. But what about if it's not a makom sakana? It's just like, look, I don't know. The doctor says I'm uncomfortable with the situation. I don't want you to go home. I'm uncomfortable. Is it a smakom sakana? I don't think so. But I'm not very comfortable. So what would you do then? So if you accept Rav Moshe's opinion, I think you would be a little bit more stringent. If you don't accept Rav Moshe's opinion, you'd be a little bit more lenient. And if, for example, here, Rav Willig, Rav Shechter, Rav Blyth, do not really much accept Rav Moshe's opinion. They think what he's saying makes sense. It's an idea. And we're not going to allow induction just stop for no reason, for a tax rebate. But if there's any reason that seems to register as necessary for any health-related anything, we're going to do it. Right? If it seems to be medically relevant, we're going to do it. So that's Rav Moshe. Fine. Okay. And then just one other thing is that comes up is, can the husband be present in the labor room? Right? So I remember I was talking to my wife that we're willing about this. 50 years ago, it was expected that the husband would be outside. Right? You were not. So many, many years ago.
Yeah, there's that famous image of like the father shuffling and.
Yeah, we're sitting on the floor. Right, okay. So many years ago, they used to put the women out. They used to completely knock them out to deliver the babies. So then they didn't want anybody present. Fine. And even after that, the man was expected to be outside. Rabbi Willig was telling me, so Rabbi Willig's children are a little bit younger than Rabbi Willig's children. So, right? Some of them. They span his 9 children, so I think they span some years. And he said, if he remembers that with the first couple of kids, he waited outside. Because that's what he was told to do.
Can I ask what's the halakha that you shouldn't wait inside?
So that's what they forget halakha, Judaism. It's nothing to do with Judaism. Oh. This just happened. This is what happened. This is what was done. The men did not go into the labor room.
No, but I mean, why are you asking the question?
I mean, can you? Because I think today most women want their husbands inside. So, this question, seeing as we're just telling practically, this never happened. Men didn't go inside, so why not? Why in the secular world would men not go inside? So I think they thought it was either unseemly, or like this is like a woman's area, or like this is like a woman's thing, men should be part of it. I don't know exactly.
I think it's a pagan thing, because in pagan societies, they don't allow men, so it probably came from like, you know.
Could be. I'm telling you, in this country, possibly all this country, it was assumed that the men stay outside, so he was telling me, oh, so he waited outside. So at one point, with one of the kids, like one of the later children, he was waiting outside, and the doctor goes, where are you? He goes, well, I was waiting outside. He goes, why are you waiting outside? He goes, apparently things changed. So today it's assumed in most hospitals that the man is going to be very much inside, and even helping and doing whatever. So helping is going to be a problem because who's going to need them, right? So you can't really touch them. And there are always medical students, interns, and nurses available, so they don't really need you, right? So if you don't want to, you can just get someone else to substitute for you. So you're lacking, no one's being put at risk because you're not going to say. But so many of the folks can say, you know what? It's not sinus. And you see, even in the non-Jewish world, men don't go in. Right? Because it's not appropriate. It's not sinus for a man to be there at this time. She's laying there, half exposed. Not appropriate. Maybe I should know my wife, and he's like, why would a man ever want to be there? Okay. So I guess it depends how you were brought up and in what world you were brought up. And he was brought up many years ago. But, okay, so you can try to figure out, like, okay, different hashkafas. I think most of the folks in here certainly think that it's certainly permissible. You can't touch your wife. And you're not supposed to look at any area that should be covered, certainly while she's neither. And she's neither. Okay, so you can stand with him. She's like, you can stand by your hand. It's not like it's wrong. So most of the poskim here assume that it's permissible. Many poskim still say it's just not a sneeze. It's not appropriate to be there.
Is she really a neither?
Well, she's bleeding, yeah. While she's pushing, she's bleeding.
What makes a neither?
She sees blood. She sees uterine blood. She's seeing blood. She's in labor. She's seeing blood. Right? She's definitely seeing blood.
What's nothing to do with the period?
Any uterine blood makes a neither. That doesn't come about from some artificial means or something. So labor is not considered. Even if we induce labor, it's still natural. So the woman's neither. So some of the person say, oh, you might come to touch her. Okay, but some of the person's like, you can't make up rules. We never heard of such a thing. Right? Otherwise, tell you what, you can't live with your wife in you can't sleep in the same bedroom when she's neither because you might come to touch her. No, they're halachas. You can't sleep in the same bed, but why? I mean, you might come to sleep with her. You're not allowed to do that. You can't make up rules. So they say, that's silly. You might come to touch her. So it's not sneeze. I don't know how you argue with it. It's not sneeze. But especially some of the poskim from the latter generation where this didn't happen in this country, when you see this in Sfarim, in this country, in the secular world here, it never happened. I'm assuming it was some semblance of sneeze or something like that. This was before the feminist movement, right? So you can't tell me it's a feminist thing. A woman don't want the men to be there because it's a proud moment for them. And it could very well be, but that's not that the impetus for it. So I think it was also a tzniyas thing. So they said, oh, you see, even in the non-Jewish world, it's because of tzniyas. So you see that sometimes you see that still in Sfarim, so it's still in the focus of the man. Even if you're coming here to the hospital, you're not supposed to be there once you have a baby. Most of the folks come here assume that it's fine, that you certainly can be. And they'll tell you that some were, some won't, depending on...
Why can't you touch her?
She's neither. You can't touch her rifle. She's neither.
What do you mean?
When the woman's neither, you're not allowed, the husband's not allowed to touch her. At all. She's neither. That's separate. But yeah, so that's one of the rules of neither. So you can't touch her.
You mean you have to show her neither?
Well, she's neither, yeah.
What it is, essentially.
Well, that's why all women who aren't married are considered neither. Any woman who got her period is neither. Right? So all single women who got their period are neither, they ain't got a minimum.
Yeah.
So they're neither. So it makes sense that they're right, so yeah.
What if you're helping her like, give birth?
So that's a question. If she's neither, let's say she's just sick, and you're a doctor, and she needs help. Can you help your wife while she's sick?
In other words, like, let's say the doctor's Jewish, you can't touch her either.
No, only the husband. It's meaning no one's allowed to touch her while she's neither, but we're more strict by the husband. Right, because first of all, you're only not allowed to touch her, the oraisa, the shafraisa, according to the Rambam, you're only not allowed to touch a woman in an affectionate way. Right? That issue that arises only to touch her in an affectionate way. We're assuming whenever the husband and wife touch, it should be in an affectionate way, and we can assume that it might be. The doctor, why is he not to touch Anita or a woman at all? We assume he's Isaac Malacho, he's so busy doing his medical thing that he doesn't have time to think about these other type of thoughts.
Just like the father is not thinking about...
Oh, certainly he is. You see this on TV, right? He wants to give her a hug and a kiss and encourage her.
He's not giving birth. He's not thinking about sleeping with her while she's...
You're not thinking about sleeping with her. You're certainly thinking about her in an affectionate way. And you should be, even if you're not touching her. She's doing something...
Honestly, I think this is ridiculous that you should not... You should be able to touch...
Unambiguous halacha, can't touch a woman while she's...
That you're not allowed to touch a wife when she's giving birth.
Unambiguous halacha. That's the halacha according to all. There's no even more focus on it.
It's ridiculous stuff.
It's ridiculous. That's an opinion. I you understand why that statement. How am I supposed to argue with that? I mean, okay, so you think so.
But what if, like, no, I mean, what if she needs you, what if she needs to touch you to give birth?
She needs to touch you to give birth.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, comforting you?
I don't know, like, hold her hand or something.
So someone else will come and hold her hand. Bring her mother, her sister, the doula. That's why many women use doulas, right? Who come and like massage and hold her hand. And I mean, you can be there and encourage her, just can't touch her. So practically, does she really need you to give birth?
Yeah, but I feel like
not exactly.
These halachos of not.
I think they do.
Of not touching, like.
Aren't we making on these?
No. Can't touch a woman while she's naked. That's.
Marav thought you should generally make with the akhokas, aren't they?
I'm not a sociologist, but not with any permission to do so. If they are, then you're violating the law. Sorry.
I think
no, there are no rabbanim who will tell you it's permissible. There are no rabbanim who will tell you this is permissible.
But there are rabbanim who say that they're mekel on hafakos.
No, really?
They're also mekel on like the yom nida.
I'm not familiar with any Orthodox rabbis who are mekel on this.
Like maybe also, I mean, they probably usually for birth reasons, for like pregnancy reasons,
so
pregnancy problem reasons.
Normally, we'll cut out a day. We have a way to get out of one day to get out of the Lethe Shem. That's the big cool is this one day that Ashkenazim can pass on the Sfarim. The Sfarim are mekel anyway. The Chaver pass on my mekel anyway. The Rambam's machmer. Say, oh, but if she's not getting pregnant because it's extra day, she's obviously a day early. We'll let them pass on the Sfarim. It's not, I mean, it usually doesn't even help.
The whole point of not touching the very nida is because menstrual blood is considered impure, but this isn't menstrual blood.
No, it is. Any uterine.
The reason is because you're going to sleep with her.
No, you're not allowed to touch her in an infectious way. It's a doraisa to touch her in an infectious way.
Because.
No,
it's a doraisa getter.
That's the question. Is there a siag? Is there such a thing as a siag doraisa? Is siag doraisa? No, this is my focus rishonim. My focus rishonim. Is there a concept of a siyag d'oraisa? Is Rachel Yerushalayim? Is there a concept of a siyag d'oraisa? Meaning the Rabbanim makes siyag all the time.
And this example is the dispute.
This is one of the examples of the dispute. There are several of them that are dispute. For Sefer Shvi'is or something like that. There are other examples that are just. This is one of them as a dispute.
That's the one that people care about.
You say Shvi'is doesn't, Shvi'is is not so exciting. This is already. But it's definitely this is d'oraisa in an infectious way. And if Osmond's not being affectionate to his wife during labor, that's bad. And I think we should be concerned that he is being affectionate, because I think he should be affectionate in whatever way he can be, in a halakhically appropriate way. He should try to be affectionate. She's doing something that you can't possibly ever do, and you should be thankful for that, and affectionate towards her for that. I think that's appropriate.
I still think the affectionate. It's not affectionate when she's in labor. It's not the affectionate of a normal dad.
You're right. I think it could be more.
They're two different things.
It could be more. It could be more affectionate. Meaning,
it's not the affectionate of coming to sleep with your wife. That's the affectionate that the Torah is talking about.
So only
not the affectionate
only
of holding your hand while she's giving birth.
Only if you assume it's a siag d'oraisa. If you assume it's an isser, an independent isser, so then you can't tell them.
Is shaking a woman's, in a business meeting, shaking a woman's hand considered affectionate, or is it just, greeting? I mean, it's the same thing. It's pushing it off.
So regardless, by the husband, we're even more machmir. By the husband, we're even more machmir than another.
No, but even if we don't see it as a siyag d'oraisa, what do we see? We see that's just an isser.
Independent isser, yeah.
Okay, and what's the isser?
To touch her in an affectionate way.
Okay, so the same thing.
No, but you're telling me it's only because you're afraid that you're going to do it.
I'll still say,
you can't
I'll still
say,
say that the affectionate, you're saying what we're referring to is a different affectionate.
But it's still us. It's not even
why?
In the same. It's just Rabbanan even in any way. But the husband, we're even more machmer. Why? It makes sense that by the husband we're going to be even more machmer than by his
hand.
Because he's the one who, this is normal for him to do. Right? So we're more machmer by the husband than we are by other people. Because it makes sense.
Okay.
So
not while she's in labor, and this is not the affectionate.
So you have to
this is not the affection.
So for years and years and years, for thousands of years, the husband wasn't even in the room. I'm telling you. So she definitely doesn't need him to have a baby, right? Forget Judy's.
No, but you also said that the husband apparently didn't even go with his wife to the hospital or go with his wife to the birthday.
Oh, this is so much easier.
You shouldn't do that either.
There's no mystery. Here, there's mystery involved. See, you can't tell me she needs him to give birth because for thousands of years, women managed. Without medical advances, without epidurals, without pain control, right? Just like, whatever. Shut up and even think about these things. But without pain control, without a husband's presence. So, to tell me that the husband's presence is so necessary, it's going to be a very hard sell. Right? Because, is it really necessary? Really, really actually necessary, or she'll just feel better? And when we talk to her a little bit, she won't feel quite as good. She'll be fine.
Maybe. I just think because of this is not the affectionate touching of the Torah and
no. So first of all, no. But one,
think that it
no. Harm. You're not doing the medical procedure. The medical procedure, the doctor's doing is fine.
Fine.
No, it's not a medical procedure is going on. Let's say, let's say she's getting her leg sawed off and an amputation.
Uh-huh.
I think you can hold her hand when she's getting her leg sawed off.
Would she be as comfortable holding your hand as your brother's hand? Your husband.
No, she would not.
Why?
She wants to hold her husband's hand.
Why? Why her husband?
Because
she loves him.
So?
That's affection.
But that's not the affection. No, that's not the affection.
Because you're telling her the reason is that they're being... The halakha is
not
the same. So first of all, halakha doesn't care why. But if she specifically wants her husband...
doesn't care why. They're talking about two different...
If she wants her husband, you can't tell me. Why does she want her husband?
Because he's her husband.
And they love each other, right?
So what?
What? That's why she wants him, right?
It has nothing to do with, you know, them wanting...
She doesn't want her, like, third... No, you tell... Okay, but they don't tell you it's an independent issue. You're going back to the... Oh, what's the sleeping with her? If it's an independent Easter, and she only wants her husband...
She wants to hold her husband's hand because he is her husband.
And therefore... And so what? She loves him, right? I mean,
okay, so she loves her parents, too.
But she doesn't want her parents, she wants her husband. Because she loves her husband in a different way than she loves her parents. I hope. Let's assume. That's safe, right? You're with me on that. It's because she loves him in a different type of a way. And that's the type of a way that we want, we're not allowing during Nida.
No, but I don't... That doesn't matter.
No, that's the type of a way that we answer during Nida. That type of way, because of a love between the husband and the wife. Even in a casual way, we don't allow it during Nida.
Wait, you're saying the Torah doesn't allow it?
Yeah, if you... Yeah, if according